The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM, and it is great to be in for Dory once again. It's been quite a while. And it's also great to be in the studio, breathing a little fresh air here with the mask off. This incident, before I got in, I've never been one of the people who I don't show up to stores or anywhere and say, I don't want to wear a mask, cause a big scene, because it's obviously a policy for people. And, you know, so I just put on the mask, go in, get out.
I only put one on now if it says you must.
That's right. Well, me too.
So Marshall's, TJ Maxx, those type of stores, right. Some of the department stores are still requiring them. But the rest are pretty much have taken down their signs. And if there's no sign, I'm not wearing one.
My grocery stores, the Costco and the Fred Meyer there, they both have this little, they have the big sign up that says masks are required, but they have the little sign inside that sign that says, unless you're vaccinated, then no problem. You don't have to wear it. So it's strange because in one of the stores, almost nobody's wearing a mask. In another store, everybody's wearing a mask except me. And I get a lot of scowls, and I don't mind that at all because I just feel like I feel sorry for you. You are living in a state of fear that you don't yet have to have. Okay. I'm not going to argue with people. In fact, one of the checkers actually told me, you know, I think this is too early. It's too early for people. And I thought, with 70% of the public vaccinated and all of the basically anybody who's in the most vulnerable zone has either got a vaccination or they must have been in a coma at some point, unable to get to any pharmacy or Fred Meyer or they're offered everywhere. They're paying people millions of dollars to go get vaccinated at this point. So, you know, I just thought, when would your fear zone be gone? I mean, when would you say it's okay to just go out and breathe again? Anyway, so I show up today and I didn't have a mask on when I walked in. They're like, do you have a mask? And I thought, oh no. You know, you should have been told that. I was thinking, I probably was. I get lots of emails and I don't read them all because I don't have time to read all my emails. And I usually have a mask or two in my pocket, but I actually laundered my pants before I came here because I've got four toddlers and it had been a while. And it was, you know.
Thanks for doing that.
You know what I mean? I mean, I generally work remotely. And so now that I'm with people, I realized, you know, I got
to have to wash your clothes more often.
On Zoom, you just wear black stuff and it kind of absorbs the color.
Nobody can smell you.
Yeah. I mean, I realized I did not launder the shirt. So there's a lot of smearing on the shirt. But in my defense, it was new this morning. It just by the time I got out of the house, it was dirty. Okay. So there's that. Anyway, fascinating stuff for everybody tuning into the Dory Monson Show, I'm sure.
Fascinating.
But it is good to be here. I didn't mean to be, what is it they call it, these things now, the hip kids now, Nicole? I know you're still young. A Karen.
Not really.
I didn't mean to be a Karen when I walked in. I would have worn it if I'd have known that I was in
King
County.
Karen would be telling you to put on the mask.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, I forgot I was in King County where... for the past year and a half, they've been saying, listen to the science and listen to the CDC. And then when the CDC says, yeah, you don't have to wear a mask, they say, we haven't decided what our policy is. So, you know, we're just going to keep it the way it is because we kind of like this constant state of fear. Really, it boosts up our own sense of self-importance and make sure that we're not going to put any context out there for people to kind of reduce fear. We're just going to keep it up. And by the way, I say that as someone who takes the disease very seriously, of course, but I also take the impact of keeping people in a state of fear very seriously. All right, David Bowe's in for Dory Monson. Time to get to the big lead.
The big lead, top story.
Well, once again, a Seattle city council member wants to, legalize some drugs in this case. Now, ostensibly, the reason for this would be to help traumatic brain injury, to help people dealing with brain function that has been misfiring, so to speak, post-traumatic stress, other things. And council member Andrew Lewis would like to legalize shrooms for this. Now, I know what you're thinking. I thought everything was already legal in Seattle because people do open drug deals all the time. There's people using on the side of the road that you can see. And Seattle's been, you know, pretty much a legal zone for quite some time. That's what I thought as well. But now he wants to make it official. But in this case, it's all for the sake of medicine.
And we've also been in close contact with the advocates organizing around the Decrim Nature movement to reassess public policy in a progressive direction around entheogens also known as psychedelics, and the city policy related to entheogens, following the lead of a number of jurisdictions around the country who have either made it a low law enforcement priority or even legalized or decriminalized the substances.
I just, one, I feel like this guy is a public, as a civil servant, just through and through. Or, you know, I'm going to speak in such a manner that it's hard for the general public to understand what I'm saying, so that everyone knows that I'm speaking in a way that shows that I'm smarter than you. I have your best interests at heart, and you needn't question anything I say. That's the impression I get from it. Secondly, if it's a medical issue, is this a city council thing? I mean, shouldn't this be just basically let's legalize it for doctors to prescribe and utilize, not something that the city has to say, all right, we found this guy on the side of the road, nude, doing some lewd acts, but apparently he was just doing some shrooms. So, you know, I'm sure it was a self-medicating issue. I'm looking at the Seattle spread. It was inevitable, but, you know, Everett is still a lot like The Walking Dead in zones. I went to my grocery store, the most local grocery store, the other day to go shopping, and it's best when the kids fall asleep. Everything's taken care of, and then between 10 and 11 p.m. is my sweet spot, so I can get everything done. You go in, and they close down the grocery store there, and this is a quote from the clerk. The clerk said, we're starting to close at 10 o'clock now because after 10 o'clock, it gets like The Walking Dead in the parking lot. You know, there's too many drug-addled people wandering about, and it's too dangerous around here. You know, and that's in Tacoma, and Tacoma's been vastly better than Seattle, but there are places where you're driving through and you start to notice what the jungle used to look like in Seattle, where they would kind of hide all the tent cities back in the brush and try to make it so that you couldn't see them right up in front of God and everybody. That's kind of spreading around and getting bigger and bigger. So do you welcome the idea of yet another legalization? I'm all for reforms. I don't like jailing people for things when there might be an alternative that works better, like having them work and actually pay people restitution or the state restitution for doing stupid stuff. That said, you know, this just the Seattle's entire approach seems to be like, hey, it's our fault. You know, we've been judging people who've been doing a bunch of illegal drugs and making themselves unemployable and in physically disabled from abuse of themselves instead of trying to work to get rid of it. We're already at, where was it? Was it Portland that was sending them tickets to Seattle? Or was it San Francisco? One of these places was just like, you know what? We can cure our problem. Let's just give them a ticket straight to Seattle. And it's of little wonder. All right. Next up on the Big Lead Local, we've got restaurants are back. Everybody's excited to be back, and everybody's complaining about the waits because, after all, you know, you go to a restaurant, you might have to wait a while, and the prices are high too. And why is that happening? Because nobody's willing to work. Restaurants facing staffing and supply shortages, and diners are seeing higher prices. This from Como 4 Television News. They're faced with these shutdowns. They need service. They need bartenders, according to a co-owner of Babar, which is a strange name. I feel like I should read a children's book just saying the name of that bar, the Babar. Doesn't that?
Like
the
Babar?
Only one? Yeah.
Elephant?
Doesn't?
I get
you,
it.
Don't you feel like that's a little...
It's cool.
An infringement
it's cool,
there?
It's why, a cool place.
Why is that cool? I don't understand. Do they have the elephant?
No, I'm just saying it's a nice place.
Is the elephant
there.
On there? I believe you. I'm just saying, who comes up with the name... Like, if you said that name, doesn't...
I believe it's an ethnic thing.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I don't know where Babar came from, but it just, you know, automatically goes to my head. Anyway, I'm not very hip anyway, so, I mean, I know that shocks you and all listening, but I was not hip at my hippest, so there's that. Now, the supply shortage means that the restaurant has trouble stocking up on everything from to-go bags, which is good news, because nobody wants any one-time bag, right? Because we can't use those things. That's not allowed. Here's Cairo 7. No, this is Cairo 7's report.
Yeah, it's Como. Sorry. Mislabeled.
Mislabeled. I apologize. All right. A shameless plug for Cairo, but an inaccurate one. Way to go, Como.
We still need server. We still need bartender.
Like many restaurants, they now face a double whammy, a staffing shortage plus a supply shortage.
So the oxtail, we were thinking of completely removing it from the menu because the price increased to 40-45%. Same with the chopstick. It's like shortage everywhere.
To make up for staffing shortages, restaurant owners have increased wages to try and attract prospective workers. All the extra spending for workers and supplies mean higher menu prices.
Wow. First of all, 40-45%, that is a pretty steep increase on a menu item. Also, I didn't know oxtail was very popular. I think that that's kind of awesome, too. I have not had oxtail that I'm aware of. I've had cow tongue, but not oxtail. And I'm, don't get me wrong, I'm not a regular connoisseur of cow tongue, but my grandma, I remember, used to eat it, so you know, I had to take a bite. But anyway, another restaurant, Fremont, is raising prices.
Across town, Cafe Turco in Fremont faces the same dilemma, struggling to hire and struggling to secure supplies.
Right now, there is lamb shortage. Lamb is our main ingredient. The prices went up. From $4, we started paying $8 for a pound of lamb.
Restaurant owner Soraya Gokeri says she's had to make some tough choices.
Like many businesses right now, we are in the process of increasing the prices by a few dollars. But thank God the customers are very understanding.
Customers like Ben Kaplan.
We want to make sure that the restaurants stay in business, so you know, if we got to pay more for them to be able to stay in business, I'm willing to do that.
The paramount thing is that businesses have to pay their workers a living wage.
I just love the self-righteous person at the end there. They have to pay them a living wage. That's what the problem is here. It's like, wait a second, they can't get people to work, you know. And frankly, if you have not every job has to supply an entire household, right? It's not like you get a job of any skill level whatsoever, and it's supposed to pay for everything. It's never been that way. It's not supposed to be that way. If you try to force it that way, you cause all kinds of problems because people will not pay what something's not worth, not for long anyway. You might sucker them from time to time because they think it's of value, but eventually they will not do it. So, you know, for example, if you say, well, a living wage is X and Ruth's Chris Steakhouse and McDonald's have to pay the same rate, you know, I guarantee you people will stop going to McDonald's and head to Ruth's, because if they're going to have that, you know, that value, they're going to go for, you know, the more expensive place, and you'll eliminate the lower cost items that people want, you know. And then if, you know, if there's a skill that you know, let's say you're I hate to use the wagon wheel maker because it's overused, but still, you know, in the old days you made wagon wheels, right? Because there was no cars. Then cars come along, and you got a bunch of guys making a wagon wheel. Well, how much is their labor worth? Is it a living wage at all times? You know? And you might say, well, absolutely. Otherwise, they got to go out of business. The wage of zero is tough, too. And, you know, there's all kinds of commotion in a free market as products, you know, go in and out of fashion, as technology changes, tastes change, emphasis changes. People will they'll make a lot of money in one area and suddenly it'll go down because there's some other alternative out there that they were unaware of before. So, you know, having other people kind of step outside themselves and say, no, this is what a job is worth. It is worth this because I say it is. That's just not how. And by the way, the same people, I bet, is if they have somebody mow their lawn, if they're having somebody do, you know, all kinds of smaller household tasks, or they're buying other small things, there's no way that they're going to pay, you know, a wage that they would consider living if it means they would be giving up their own wage, you know, in terms of the prices. It just, that's not the way the world works. So the restaurants are back, but they've got a lack of staff. They've got much higher prices. And we haven't even hit the inflation yet, right? I mean, there's only so long we can print trillions of dollars at a time and not have inflation. I mean, I keep looking at this and I used to have COVID apprehension, you know, when you look around at China, this back over a year and a half ago, and you just look at, you know, armies of masked people spraying some kind of decontamination in the middle of the streets and saying, yeah, P.S., it's headed here. I thought, well, that can't be good, you know. And now I look at trillions of dollars and then trillions more that are planned to be spent, and you think, doesn't inflation have to hit at some point to make up for the fact that we're spending so much more than we actually have, that we actually take in? I mean, it doesn't, it's not like the money tree can be shaken forever, right? So, you know, if you think the prices are high now, it might be a bargain. You might want to go in and get what you can right now. And then, because later it might be even more expensive and even tougher for you. And that's part of the pain. The Seattle Times has filed a lawsuit over Mayor Durkin's missing texts. You'll recall that the mayor conveniently lost her text messages along with some other public safety officers in Seattle for during the August 2019 to June 2020. In August, they learned that thanks to some whistleblowers, the mayor's legal counsel discovered that Durkin's texts between August of 2019 and June 2020 had not been retained. And then it's alleged that the legal counsel directed the whistleblowers, Stacey Irwin and Kim Fierro, I'm butchering it, but anyway, Kim, to narrowly interpret public records requests for messages to conceal the fact they were missing. Very open government. Then when this was blown up, you had the mayor telling Brandi Cruz on Q13, oh, I've been so open. I mean, I've been open the whole time. We had press conferences. You know, if we have press conferences, I mean, how can you get any more open than that, answering all these questions? Well, you know, thank God for the Times doing this lawsuit, because it's absolutely absurd. This idea that a press conference is more open than the behind-the-scenes emails and texts. I mean, how do you think it is? Anybody learns the actual truth, you know? I mean, I had to laugh. And when the mayor says, Brandi Cruz said, you know, when I want to delete my messages, I have to go in and change the setting on my phone in order to make sure that the messages aren't saved. Your messages and the messages of these various other public officials, they all had the same quote-unquote mistake at the same time during the CHOP zone in Seattle, you know, and the mayor's like glosses that over. Ah, yeah, you know, I mean, that's what happens. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the Seattle Times nailing them, and I'm looking forward to whatever the Seattle Times can. I want somebody accountable, because otherwise, you know, they get away with it. And what's the message, right? The message is destroy that stuff right now, because it's going to make you look bad, and there's no real consequence. Hopefully, there will be one here. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. You know, it's funny just hearing the bottom of the hour news and listening to Kamala Harris's trip to Central America and the announcement, don't come here. I thought, I wonder how the media will cover that trip where she's saying don't come here versus, say, the last administration's pronouncements of don't come here. You know, I mean, it's basically the same verbiage. So what are we going to, what's the big difference here? And by the way, the whole situation's sad. Of course, people are going to try and escape because they're living misery and poverty, and they've got dysfunctional governments, even more dysfunctional than ours, but for obvious reasons, and dysfunctional systems. You know, people that were once breadbaskets of the continent are now very, very, very plagued by scarcity because they gave up on markets and went for socialism, which is never a good bet. So, lots of human misery there, and people want to escape that. That's a natural thing. But it's also, you know, obvious that from an administrative point of view, for various reasons, any administration worth their salt is going to have to say, you know, you can't come here. You can't have unrestricted chaos. But it'll be interesting to see how it changes. Now, speaking of interesting things and pronouncements from government, there's this, you know, I saw this in The Hill. Just the other day, it was that, you know, young people, particularly teenagers, like 12 to 17-year-olds, were being hospitalized at an increased rate. And, you know, the headline was CDC director reports the spike in teen hospitalizations, urges parents to vaccinate kids over 12. And I remember seeing that and I thought, wow, that is really bizarre, because I would have sworn that kids are at the least, you know, least danger of COVID. You know, your odds of a real problem there are exceptionally low. You know, if you look at how COVID impacts people, it's really, you know, people 50 and over, you know, where it starts to get more problematic, and 60 and over much more so. And, you know, and of course it grows with each decade. But kids, I mean, kids have not been a problem the whole time. So where did this headline come from? What does this mean? You know, and is now we're going to vaccinate everybody because now it's attacking the kids here? Is that what's happening? Well, then you take a look. There's a great story here in the Blaze media where, you know, they're taking a look at what this headline was really talking about, what the studies were. And the CDC published a study showing the supposed increase in hospitalizations for 12 to 17-year-olds, with a third of them being in the ICU. You know, imagine being a parent, you're reading about this. Wait a second, a third of these kids are ending up in the ICU, 5% placed on ventilators. You know, is it any wonder? I mean, this is designed, this is fear, right? I mean, you read that as a parent, you're afraid. And the director of the CDC said, quote, "I'm deeply concerned by the numbers of hospitalized adolescents and saddened to see the number of adolescents who require treatment in intensive care units or mechanical ventilation." So, of course, you know, until they're fully vaccinated, adolescents should continue to wear masks and take precautions when around others who are not vaccinated to protect themselves, their family, their friends, and the community. You know, so we've got CNN and the usual media pouncing on this and saying, look, this is the danger. Everybody get vaccinated, including the, 12 and up. But then, as the story points out, you take a closer look at what the study is that they're really talking about here, and you break down the headline, and the hospitalizations among all groups have plummeted over the last 6 weeks. What they did is they picked an arbitrary start and end point, you know, which is what you do in a study if you want to create an impression. They did this recently with a story that was a front page in the Seattle Times on this Lower Snake River dams issue, where they said, hey, you know, at the Salmon Run here, it's, you know, we're on the verge of extinction. ABC News picked up the same thing. And Todd Myers, my colleague at Washington Policy Center, pointed out that the data was cherry-picked. The 2020 data was available, showing a sharp growth in the number of salmon making the run. But that doesn't make the headline. Only the fear stat does. So even though the data is available, they're not using it because it doesn't fit the narrative that they want. And then in this case, same thing happening, where apparently they've got these two arbitrary starting and endpoints to make it look like, you know, there's this sharp uptick of danger for kids. The study period of the CDC's report is March 1st, 2020 to April 24th, 2021. April 24th was near the peak of all age groups. So, you know, they had an increase due to basically a seasonal spread. And based on the CDC's headline, you know, you would think, though, that it was happening now, but this was really back in the spring. And so in reality, we've had this plummeting of hospitalizations, where, you know, there's been, you know, such an advance in vaccinations, there's it's just not happening. And so instead we got the fear, the fear factor going on. Just, hey, scare people with this big headline. Let's keep it moving. Let's, you know, get these vaccinations out there. And the reason why this bothers me so much isn't because I take COVID, you know, I don't take COVID seriously. I do. It's a danger to some people. Some people obviously react more dangerously to others. I've known people who have both had, you know, their worst symptom was they lost a taste of smell, you know, and taste and smell. And then others who were hospitalized very seriously. And then others who basically it was like a cold. And I probably know a lot of people who had no symptoms whatsoever, because a lot of times you don't. You just wouldn't know that you had it or whatever. But the reason this bothers me is it's false fear. If you're telling people that this is happening, it's a danger to the kids and it's this sharp spike, but it's not actually happening, and you're undermining confidence in public health, you're undermining confidence in what you might say in the future, because as people learn that they're being lied to, it undermines your ability to respond in a future emergency. You know, I mean, let's say instead of COVID, it's like, hey, guess what? We just found out that you know, certainly didn't escape from a lab. It was transmitted from a bat. Don't worry about that. It's just coincidence that it was right next to a very dangerous regime's bioweapons lab facility there. So don't worry about that. But we've got Ebola spreading from airborne. You know, everybody's bleeding out their eyes. You know, I mean, let's say there's something vastly more serious coming along and you needed a more rapid public trust in government. When government undermines their own trust, when public officials undermine their own trust, that's why I didn't like, you know, lying to people about, you know, what they should or shouldn't do and saying, well, you know, we've got to inspire them and keep them focused, you know, with masks or whatever. I want people to be honest about what it is, you know, about what the values are and what the risks are and what the risks are not, and context, so that the next time something big comes around, people are, people will pay attention. But if they're being lied to, they're going to say, nope, seen this before, not playing the game again. So they continued with the statement that, you know, the big headline on the Hill was, you know, kids are being hospitalized, they're on ventilators, very dangerous. Then they dig further in the data in this Blaze story, where it turns out that the hospital rates among children actually increased more slowly during the early spring spread than among those over 65, the most vaccinated demographic. And then when they looked at the hospitalizations of the teens, it got even more bizarre, because almost half of the so-called COVID hospitalizations in the age group were for something other than COVID. So in other words, they had COVID, but they're not hospitalized from COVID. You know what I mean? Because when you go into a hospital now, or if you're getting a treatment, you know, as many of my friends and relatives have done, you have to get a test, right? So these kids are in the hospital, they get a test, they've got COVID, but it's not why they're in the hospital. So that's roughly half of them. But the headline was such to suggest that, you know, all these kids in the hospital were there because of COVID. So half of them have COVID. So in that age group, about half were in there for something other than COVID. So that artificially inflates this notion that the kids are in danger. In addition, and this was one of the most disturbing parts, of the 172 children admitted to the hospital but not for COVID, 44% were there for psychiatric care. You know, I mean, think about that. Think about, there's been a lot of talk about increases among suicide rates, and mental health issues among teens, depression among people. People have this feeling, you know, things will never get better. Human beings are largely, you know, we're social animals, right? We need each other. We need to interact with one another. We need to be able to talk with one another. And, you know, and kids have been left out of that for a long time. So, you know, that's where we're at. You've got this big headline scaring people. And it's like, hey, get vaccinated. Get it. And look, you know, I am vaccinated. I'm not an anti-vax person at all. I'm all for it. You know, if you can vaccinate me against everything, I'm all for that. But I really hate lying to people, and I really hate trying to manipulate people, and I really hate trying to keep people in a state of fear that is unnecessary, wrong, and irresponsible. David Bowe's in for Jory Monson. Coming up, you'll hear Bill Maher take on colleges as a scam. That's next. David Bowe's in for Jory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. HBO's Bill Maher, who, you know, I don't always agree with the guy, but I do enjoy his sarcastic wit. He's taking on this notion that what we really need to do is have the taxpayers suck up the college debt of America's college graduates.
A third of students now spend less than 5 hours a week studying, and when they do, it's for their onerous magnum cum course load of sports marketing, history through Twitter, advanced racist spotting, intro to microaggressions, and you owe me an apology 101.
Yeah.
Why is China kicking our ass? Because in 2019, we issued more undergrad degrees in visual and performing arts than in computer and information science or math. Say what you want about Lori Loughlin. At least she understood that one good scam deserves another. And in the immortal words of her daughter, Olivia Jade, I don't know how much school I'm going to attend, but I do want the experience of, like, game days and partying. Yeah, I'm not paying for that.
So there's just a huge part of me that agrees with him. As somebody, I was working at Walmart through college and stuff, and whenever I see this whole, hey, we need to suck up the debt for everybody who went to college, I feel sorry for, I mean, I know people who have six-figure debt going, you know, getting out of college. It's ridiculous. The costs are through the roof. There's no reason for it. There's no valid reason that it should cost that much. You know, you have this, he's right. There's escalation of all kinds of nonsense classes that are designed to keep people in a victim mentality for the rest of their lives, whoever you are. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, race, creed, color, background. There's some reason for you to feel offended for the rest of your life or be offended or feel sorry for being offended. And you know, when you're looking at, there's no link between how much this degree is going to cost and how much you even have a snowball chance in hell of making after you get a job, presumably in that major. I mean, for crying out loud.
A wannabe librarian needs a master's degree just to get an entry-level job filing books. You know, I've heard this from so many nurses and teachers and administrators rolling their eyes when relating how they needed to take some course in order to advance in their field. And really, they already learned what they need by working the job. But in the grift that is our higher education, when you want to move up, hold on there, not so fast, toll booth ahead, you need to pay for more education before we decide if you can do what you do.
Yeah, and it ends up being a political kind of gravy train for far left people who would never be employed otherwise, right? I mean, there's no way you're going to get that kind of a job, tenure job, outside of the university system where absurdity has a mask of validity and a mask of academia. You know, it's ridiculous.
And because it's so necessary, colleges can charge whatever they want. Since 1985, the average cost of college has risen 500%. What other business? It doubles every 9 years. Every year it increases at four times the rate of inflation. And yet no one knows how to change a tire. The answer isn't to make college free. The answer is to make it more unnecessary, which it is for most jobs.
That is a brilliant point. It's a very basic point. It's a point, you know, it's not that others haven't made it, but he's boiled it down. People are running around trying to figure out how to make college cheaper and subsidize stupidity, subsidize ridiculousness over and over again, running around, hey, how do we do this? How do we do that? How do we make it? And you end up subsidizing the problem. And the more money you throw at it, there's no downward pressure for colleges to try to figure out how to reduce costs, right? Because, you know, why would you? If you can keep demanding that you get the money and government demands to bail people out for paying the money, then there's no reason, you know, to actually reduce costs. There's no market force there. So, you know, what you really need to do is try to make it so that colleges, I mean, you know, most employers will tell you it's a gateway to kind of weed out people who aren't serious about working. That's what people say. And then you learn what you need to learn on the job.
Because the system we have sets up this winner-loser dynamic and breeds resentment that working hard has less value than sitting around in this thing.
And that's a lazy river he's showing, which one college now has. A lazy river you can float.
A water park, I think it's in Texas. You know, there's a part of me that's like, oh, I would love that. But I feel like, just like proms are now based on all 80s proms flicks, you know, now college is based on Animal House. It's absurd. David Bowes in for Dory Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM.